every moment of every day, you are actively using the sixth gift. The secret to unlocking its true power involves a shift in the way you use it that's deceptively subtle and simple. Once you discover how to make this shift, prepare to be amazed. You will feel as if you just stepped into a completely different world, and in the most important ways, that is exactly what you will have done. It won't look different, but suddenly challenges that seemed overwhelming will simply be gone, and you'll find yourself surrounded on all sides by opportunities and possibilities you never saw before, though they were always there, just waiting for you to grab them.
On October the 21st, 1961, a man by the name of Raymond Stanford sat down with me. He put an R on a sheet of paper, two H's and a W beside it. He said, "Bob, let this R represent results. The two H's represent happiness and health, and the W represents wealth." Then he asked me if I thought he was a happy person. I had to admit that he was. He said, "Have you ever seen me sick?" I had to admit I hadn't. Then he asked me if I'd ever seen him when he didn't have any money, when he was broke. I had to admit I hadn't. He proceeded to tell me he thought I was one of the most miserable people that he had ever met. He said, "You're never healthy. You've always got a cold or a backache or something." And he said, "You're always broke." No, actually, he was being rather kind. I was earning $4,000 a year and I owed six. And he said, "Why don't you change this?" I really didn't believe I could. He said, "You know, you can have anything you want, but you're going to have to change the way you're looking at your life." And I said, "What do you mean?" "Well," he said, "you're figuring out why you can't change." He said, "You're looking at the fact you never went to school, you don't have any business experience, you're putting yourself down. If you would change your point of view of you, if you would look at yourself a different way, your whole world would begin to change." He said, "Your problem isn't lack of education. Your problem isn't lack of experience or money." He said, "You've got a perception problem. You're looking at yourself the wrong way." And he said, "If you change your point of view, your whole life will change." Today, the company that I own does millions of dollars in business. We operate in 47 different countries. The company is growing every day. All I really did was change my point of view.
That is so powerful. That completely changed my life when I began to touch the hem of the garment of this faculty, perception. I went to a lecture. I was 21 years old, and in the lecture, I heard the man say, "Nothing is bad unless you think it's bad." Internally, I was just arguing. I railed against that idea. I thought, well, that's not true. There's bad stuff in this world. Car wrecks are bad. Murder's bad. War is bad. And he said, "The next time something happens that you are tempted to immediately say, this is bad, push your internal pause button and then wait 3 days, during which time practice looking for any possible good that might be in what you immediately thought was bad." And then he said, "In the universe," and when he described it as a universe, I heard that una stand out like there's the one life, one presence, one spirit, one mind. In this universe, there is no opposite. There's one power within which there is apparent good and apparent bad, and it's based on your programming. So he said, "I'll unlock this for you very simply. The next time something happens that you think is bad, pause and wait 3 days, during which time get really curious about what possible good there might be in this circumstance." Well, 2 days later, my kid's dad lost his job. He came home. There had been a massive layoff, and he was one of those who got laid off. I was getting my undergraduate degree at the time, and I immediately started to feel panicked about, oh, my gosh, he doesn't have a job. We're not going to have any money. And I began to run my response pattern that I'd been programmed, which was if you get fired or lose a job or get laid off, that's bad. So I immediately began to feel the feeling tones of all those thoughts when I remembered, and I said out loud, "Well, that guy Sunday said nothing is bad unless we think it's bad. This just seems so bad." And then I said, "Okay, let's try this out. Let's wait 3 days, and if we can't find some good in it by Friday, then we'll panic." And it was the first time I ever recognized that I could actually schedule my own panic. Up until that moment, unconsciously, I was just a button of responses programmed in, and when anything triggered that response that had been programmed into me, I gave the response that I had programmed. So Did I try to panic during the next 3 days? Of course. There were many times when my mind wanted to run over and pick up that panic. But every time it did, I said, no, I'll pick you up on Friday. And I began to gain some internal recognition that I actually could choose to think differently. I didn't have to suffer in the same way I'd always suffered. I immediately didn't find any good in it. What I was finding was that I could choose how I was going to feel, even in the presence of a circumstance that wasn't my first choice. It wasn't what I preferred. It wasn't what I wanted. And what happened for us was that within 3 days, he had a better paying job, closer to home, more money, shorter hours. He could actually ride his bike to work, which he loved to do. And I realized that I hadn't suffered waiting for a circumstance to change before I could feel better. That access point is what Viktor Frankl discovered in the concentration camp. His book, Man's Search for Meaning, I would not find for several years after this moment in my life. But when I found that book, I realized that when he touched that same place inside himself, and I told you earlier in the program that when I touched that place inside myself, I felt like I found my way from a dark attic to a doorway, and a whole world of choice was now mine. Well, Viktor Frankl was a physician who was taken to a concentration camp. His whole family taken. One by one, every member of his family was killed. They found a manuscript that was his life's work. As they took him in front of the tribunal, he'd hidden it inside the mattress. And when they found it, they took him, they stripped him naked, and they're burning the manuscript in front of him. His wife has now been taken from him. She's gone to the showers. Everything that mattered in his life, except for the manuscript, was gone. As they're burning the manuscript, one of the guards in the tribunal notices that he has a gold wedding band on his left hand, and they demanded his gold wedding ring. They demanded the last vestige of the life he had known. And when he wrote about that moment, he said, as he went to remove the last vestige, the last part of any semblance of the life he had known and loved, he touched a part of himself that he called every one of our own last and eternal freedoms. And that is the choice that we have to decide how we will respond to any circumstance or situation, that we get to shape the meaning of it any way we want. Now, before we know that we have the power to choose a perception in the midst of an experience, all we have access to is our programming. Somebody told us this was good. Somebody told us that was bad. Somebody told us we should want this. Somebody told us we shouldn't want that. Throughout this program, what you're discovering is that there is a you to get to know. There is a you that has freedom. There is a you that can choose and create and has the authority to have dominion over materiality, to call forth from the invisible realm and shape in your mind an idea that actually is a thought form. It becomes like the ability for this infinite thought substance to pour itself into the patterns that you choose. Imagine a cement truck coming down the street. If you don't put a form there and it pours out the cement, it just goes everywhere. But you can make that same mess into a sidewalk or a driveway or to a porch or to a patio. You can make it into anything you want. This invisible spirit, thought substance, is everywhere present. You call upon it, shape it with your thinking. You get to choose your perception. So I want to invite you to recognize you have an internal pause button. When something happens and you find yourself instantly wanting to react to it, pause. That internal place is right inside of you. It gives you access to a stream of information, ideas, and insight that's just there for you to shape into the possibility of your life.
I want to suggest you take any challenge you happen to be facing at the present time. And I'm going to ask you to write it out in as much detail as you can on a sheet of paper. Then I'm going to ask you to put the sheet of paper in the center of a table, a kitchen table, a dining room table, or your desk if you want. And then sit and look at it. Now, from that point of view, ask yourself, what can I do about this? How can I solve this problem? And if no answer comes, get up and physically move to another place on the table. Go to the other end of the table and look at it again. The physical moving from one place to another is going to cause something inside you to begin to shift. The answer to any challenge that comes to us is already here. It's our perception that tells us we cannot solve the problem. Perceptions are our reality. Our perception creates our reality. It's how we see the situation. What we have to understand is that our perceptions are formed by our paradigm. Our paradigm is nothing but a multitude of ideas that are fixed in our subconscious mind. And it's the paradigm that causes us to look at things the way we're looking at them. You may take your income and ask yourself, how could I multiply it? How could I turn my annual income to a monthly income? Now, from your point of view, where you're at right now, you may instantly say, I'd never be able to do that. And you're right, from your point of view. But if you had somebody else's point of view, somebody that was earning that much money, they could probably sit down and they could say, well, I could show you a number of different ways to do this. And that's because they're looking at it from another place. I remember one time I wrote a radio show. I was flying over Kentucky somewhere. I looked down and I saw the houses, and they looked so small, and the property that they were on, it didn't even look as big as the property on a Monopoly board. And it seemed so insignificant from up there. And I thought of a poem that Don Blanding wrote, and he wrote it from a plane, and it was called The God's Eye View. And I thought, this must be like The God's Eye View. Now, at the same time that flashed on my mind, another idea, a Persian proverb, flashed on my mind. It was a story of a bug in a rug. And the little bug is pushing, trying to get past a big tuft of wool. What he's really looking for is a crumb that somebody drops so he can have something to eat. And as he gets past one tuft of wool, bang, he gets hit with another one. And he's looking up at these tufts of wool. They're his challenges. They're huge. They're mountains. If the bug could get up above the rug and look down on it, if the bug could have a God's eye view, the bug could see that they weren't problems at all. They were actually part of a beautiful pattern. Well, you know, sometimes we go through life with a bug's eye view, when what we should be doing is have the God's eye view. See, where the bug is not able to lift himself up above the carpet and look at it, you and I can. We can raise ourselves above our problems. We can look at them from a different point of view. We want to make sure that our conditioning is not freezing our perception of our situation. Let's make up our mind. We're going to rise above it. We're going to look down at it. We're going to keep shifting our perception, shifting our point of view until we see it from a totally different point of view. We might ask ourselves, how would the wealthiest person in the world look at this challenge? How would the most productive person in the world look at this challenge? And you know, we're going to shift our point of view. And when we do that, our life starts to change. So we want to ask ourselves, is my perception a bug's eye point of view? Or am I exercising my creative, my godlike ability and exercising the God's eye point of view? Well, let's get above things. Let's look at them a little bit different. Let's not let the challenge beat us. Let's make up our mind we're going to beat the challenge. What Ray Stanford caused me to do, he caused me to change my perception of my situation. He caused me to look at my situation and realize it was neither bad nor good. It just is what it is. You're going to make it what it is. For a few years, I had made it bad. I had made it in control. I had made it the master, and I was the slave. And that's exactly what James Allen said. He said, uncrown the circumstance and let it fill a servant's place. And that's what I did. And my whole world began to change, when all I really changed was my perception of my situation.
Oh, that's beautiful. Uncrown the circumstance. There's a story about Teddy Roosevelt doing exactly that. His Secretary of State once said that they'd been facing what seemed like a very big problem, and they'd gone around and around about it. And finally, Roosevelt said, okay, and he went outside, and the Secretary of State follows him out on the Oval Office porch. It's late at night, and he looks up in the sky, and he says, look, there's the Big Dipper. There's Andromeda. There's Orion's Belt. We are one tiny speck in a huge Milky Way. And he stood there for a long time and he said, there, now I think my problems are small enough. And then he went back in, and immediately an answer came that solved the problem they'd been facing. So how do we get that God's eye point of view? There was a time when I was climbing Mount Shasta with a friend. It's a beautiful mountain in California. And we were hiking up to have our lunch, and he was about 10 or 12 steps ahead of me. And we were coming around a corner, and all of a sudden he goes, oh my gosh, look at Lake Shasta. And I went, what Lake Shasta? And he said, it's a beautiful lake. Can't you see it? And I said, no, I can't see it. And he said, well, come up here. Just 10 or 12 steps up the mountain, a whole vista opened up. And there was a lake that was there all along. Just 12 steps back, I couldn't see the lake. At times when I feel like I can't see an answer, I can't see what I'm trying to find, or I seem to be, I have crowned a circumstance as if it's important. And I figure, okay, I got to get up the ladder a little bit here. I got to get up the path to have a different viewpoint. I'll put on a CD like the one you're listening to. I'll pick up a book, one of the books Bob's recommended, or some of the things we're talking about in this program. I take myself a few steps up the ladder or up the path so that I can see more. Because the frequency of the problem is not where the answer lies. When Einstein said, the significant problems we face cannot be solved at the level of thinking or the frequency with which the problem is created, it's up to you or I then to figure out how we can put ourselves up the ladder, up a higher frequency. I moved to Southern California in 2006. I lived in Oregon most of my life, and in Oregon we don't have that many fires, but in Southern California, particularly in the late summer and early fall, there are a lot of fires. The next year or two, there happened to be a fire that was coming over into the valley where I lived. So I turned on the television during the day to see what the prediction was about that fire, were they getting it contained or what was going on. And I could see through our valley that helicopters were flying through with water buckets and they're trying to put the fire out. And they were showing that they were getting that fire contained, but there'd been a fire 3 days before north of us in a place called Montecito. A beautiful neighborhood of multi-million dollar homes had completely burned to the ground. In between showing what was happening in the Porter Ranch fire next door to us and the fire that had happened a few days before up in Montecito, they were taking camera crews through that burned down neighborhood. And they came upon a couple standing in front of a pile of ashes with just smoldering steam still coming out of it and everything just reduced to rubble. The camera crew comes up and puts the microphone in their face and they go, oh, was this your home? And the couple is just sobbing, saying, we lost everything. My heart just went, oh, my gosh. And then it showed more of the Simi Valley and the Porter Ranch fire. And then it went back to that same neighborhood, and they're showing how it's completely destroyed. And they come upon another couple, and in front of them is a reduced rubble, just ashes with steam coming out of it. And they come up to the couple, and they say, oh, my gosh, was this your home? They turn, and they look at the camera, and they said, yeah, this was stuff. You know, the important things to us, each other, our kids, this was just stuff. We'll get more stuff. And it was so stark for me. Two couples looking at exactly the same thing, having polar opposite experiences of the very same experience. What was the difference? Perception. One couple holding each other saying, we lost everything. The other couple holding each other saying, we have everything. And what is the difference? It's the point of view we bring to the circumstance. So there's an old teaching story that I'll end my section here with, and that is a baseball game. This is a championship game. It's down to the bottom of the ninth. The bases are loaded. The score is tied. And they're either going to go into overtime or the game is going to be lost because if they walk this player or the player gets a hit, they're going to have a run. And it's a championship game, so everything's on the line and there's two outs. The bases are loaded. The count is 3-2. And the pitcher winds up and he throws the ball and the catcher catches it. And half the crowd shouts, it's a ball, it's a ball. Half the crowd shouts, it's a strike, it's a strike. And the umpire steps out and he says, it ain't nothing till I call it. And that's exactly how your circumstances are. They ain't nothing till you call them.
You were talking about the people that both lost houses and their different point of view. When your paradigm has you fixed on one point of view, you cannot see anything else. But as you grow, and as you expand your level of recognition, as you expand your level of awareness, you're going to find that there's a reciprocal expansion insofar as the universe is concerned, and it sends it back to you. And your consciousness expands, and you're going to get to a point where you have an intimate companionship between yourself and your source of supply. It's a beautiful thing. We have the ability to shift our perception, and when we do, the entire universe shifts. Now, you may think that sounds strange, but that's exactly the way it works. And as you get it straight, your world starts to change. You could stand on the shore of the Pacific Ocean, and you could pick up a pebble and throw it in the ocean. Do you know the entire shoreline moves? You may never be able to measure it. You may not be able to see it. but reason tells you it moves. You cannot perceive it, but it's still there. Your perception plays a big role in your life. Don't let it trick you. If you're looking into a tunnel and you see a light, you may think it's a train coming. It might not be. It just might be a light. Then again, if you look down a railroad track, it looks as if the tracks join and become one at a certain point. But the other side of your personality tells you, no, that doesn't happen. If you watch a ship sail off into the distance, it looks like it's falling off the edge, looks like it's going over the edge at some point. That's our perception. That's our mind playing tricks on us. We've got to start to exercise our thinking. We've got to expand our mind. We've got to develop our intuitive factor. We've got to start to look at the world from a totally different point of view. We've got these magnificent powers, and we've got to begin utilizing them. Don't let your perception keep you locked in to a world that you no longer want to be a part of. Now, that happened to me in 1961. It was such a dramatic shift that took place just by changing my point of view, by changing my perception, that I've never forgot it. Here I am 50 years later still talking about it because it impacted my life. As you shift your perception, you're going to find your life will be shifted. And understand that your conditioning causes you to look at things the way you're looking at them. Take a look at your income. Start to play a little game with yourself. Start to look at it from as many points of view as you can and say, how could I turn my annual income into a monthly income? Because many people are doing it, and some of them are nowhere near as bright as you are. This has nothing to do with level of intelligence. This has nothing to do with experience. This has to do with accepting a simple idea. Turn around in the room you're in, and the room looks totally different. What you see has to do with the way you're pointed in life. You change the direction that you're pointed in, and I guarantee you, your life will look totally different. Perception is a phenomenal tool. Do you know that we're the only creature on the planet that has our ability to change our perception of a situation? I like the way Wayne Dyer puts it. When you change the way you look at something, the thing you look at changes. And he's right. Mary, you shared something with me that really causes a person to think. Part of us knows this happens, and part of us have a difficult time grasping it.
Yes, Edward Lorenz started it about 4 decades ago as a research meteorologist at MIT. He created a computer program that was designed to model the weather. Lorenz had reduced weather into a series of formulas that behaved in recognizable weather patterns. And in his book, Chaos, James Gleick recounts a winter day in 1961 when Lorenz wanted to shortcut a weather printout by starting midway through. So to give the machine the initial conditions, he typed the numbers straight from the earlier printout, and then something unexpected happened. What he noticed was his simulated new weather pattern had diverged dramatically from the previous printout. At first, he thought his computer had malfunctioned. Then it suddenly hit him. There was no computer malfunction. The answer was in the numbers he'd put into the computer. In the original programming, he had used 6 decimal places, 0.506127. And in the second run, he just simply rounded off to 3 numbers, 0.506. He assumed that that difference, 1 part of 1,000, would have no real impact. He was wrong. That slight change made a huge difference. This tiny change in input had created a dramatically and overwhelmingly different output. The formal name of this phenomena is sensitive dependence on initial conditions. Sensitive dependence on initial conditions. Its informal and more popular name is the butterfly effect. It just simply means that tiny changes brought about by a butterfly moving its wings in San Francisco have the power to transform the weather conditions in Shanghai. And this is real. It's scientific. So when Edward Deming came up with a very similar conclusion, Deming is the American statistician who started the TQM, or Total Quality Movement, first in Japan and then in the rest of the world. His contribution is historically so important that U.S. News and World Report called him one of the 9 hidden turning points in history, that little changes can make huge differences. So after over 50 years of statistical study, Deming pointed out that in every process, there is a beginning and an end. And when you focus on the first 15% of that process, which is what we're doing here in this program, you're recognizing that you are at a starting point right now, that sensitive dependence on initial conditions, what you decide right now to do with your perception, whether you decide to put that problem down and go on the other side of the room, whether you decide to study this more and listen to it more often and raise yourself up a few rungs on the ladder of awareness so that you, as you move up the slope of thought, you really can see more. You know you have more choices. You know that you're not going to crown a circumstance as if it's the king of your life or the power to keep you from moving forward. So when you focus on the first 15% and get that correct, its initial conditions, you ensure at least 85% of your desired outcome. By focusing on the first 15% of anything, the remaining 85% will effortlessly follow.
I'm going to ask you to quiet your mind for a moment and think. We're talking about you shifting your perception of your life, and you're going to find your whole life will change. We often wonder why people reject these ideas. Plato described why people reject the ideas in his analogy of prisoners in an underground cave. I want you to build an image, if you will, of prisoners in an underground cave. They are chained in such a way so that they can only look straight ahead. They're not even able to look sideways. They've been there since birth. As they look straight ahead, they're looking at the wall of a cave. Now, there's a light shining in all along to the end of the cave. So the shadows of things are being cast upon the wall of the cave that the prisoners are forced to stare at. Now, above and behind the prisoners is a screen, like what the marionettes use to show their puppets. Beyond the screen, there's a fire burning. Beyond the fire burning, there's people walking, and they're carrying vessels and statues and objects. Now, the shadows of these people, the shadows of the vessels, the statues and the objects, the shadows of the flame, and the shadows of the prisoner themselves is being cast upon the wall of the cave that the prisoner has been forced to stare at since birth. The sound in the cave echoed in such a way so that it would appear as if the voices of these people walking behind the prisoner is coming from the shadows on the wall of the cave. Now, the prisoner has been forced to stare at that since birth. That's all they know. That would be their reality. Now, if they were loosened and caused to turn around, wouldn't they be blinded by the brightness? And wouldn't they prefer to turn away and look at the darkness? And then if they were told, this is real, those shadows, they're false, they'd laugh and they'd say, oh no, the shadows are real. What you're forcing me to look at is false. But if one of the prisoners were freed and then forced to climb a steep and rugged ascent up into the bright, clear light of day, wouldn't they again be blinded by the brightness? And when they could see, what would they see? Well, at first they'd see the darker objects. Then they'd see the shadows of things. Then they'd see the reflection of things in the water. Ultimately, standing in the sunlight and beholding the sun, don't you think they'd give anything to keep from returning to their fellow prisoners back in the cave? Now, if there was a contest taking place in the cave where they were giving out awards to the prisoner who could quickest and most accurately describe the moving shadows on the wall of the cave, do you think that the prisoners would care for such honors any longer? The freed prisoner wouldn't be interested in that contest. That is how Plato described why people reject what we're talking to you about, why they reject the truth, why they reject the idea that simply shifting your point of view can change your whole life. As Plato said, our duty is to go back down into the cave and educate the chained prisoners. And that's what we want to do. We want to keep talking about this. We want to keep sharing this information. We want to encourage you to keep studying it. We want to encourage you to share this information with others. Perception is one of your higher faculties. It is one of the most beautiful gifts that you've ever been given. And you can use it to change your world. You can use it to change your paradigm. And you can use it to change the world of others. It won't happen by accident. Don't live like a prisoner in an underground cave. Quit believing in the shadows. The reality, that's what you see in your mind, and that's what you can create in your life.
Bob and I have described for you that we felt like prisoners let out of a dark cave when we came upon this information. For Bob, it completely shifted his life. For me, it completely healed and saved my life. We know for you the same information. Wherever you are right now, you can change your perception. No matter what it seems like, when your mind wants to pick it up and say, wow, this is awful, say, what if it isn't? What if this is the seed of a greater good in my life that I can't even begin to understand right now? You really do have the power to climb out of that dark cave, stand in the light of your own awareness, and discover really who you are.
Mary, I don't know about you, but when I first really started to study these higher faculties, these gifts, as you so properly referred to them, everything in my life started to change. It's a strange thing. Years and years later, I'm still working on it all the time. Because where I changed my perception way back in 1961 and changed my life, as I shift my perception today, my life continues to change. We're talking about universal truths here, and we're talking about the greatest gift that God ever gave anyone, our higher faculties. These are what make us the creative beings we are. Now, we've run across imagination. Somebody says it's the greatest nation in the world, and I guess it is. It's such a marvelous tool. Then we took a look at intuition. I love the idea that prayer is when we talk to God, intuition is when God talks to us. Intuition will guide you in your life. It'll make sure you go down the right road to a brilliant future every time. And the only way we can miss is if we don't listen. We've got to start listening. We must begin to listen to that quiet voice within. Then we took a look at the will. Such a marvelous power, and you just let it work. You do not force it. We know that force negates. And we went from the will to memory and then to reason. Memory is such a beautiful tool. We played a little game, and it was a fun game, and it's a game that everybody should learn because once you do it once, you impress yourself. And when you get into reason, that is, without question, what separates us from all the rest of the animal kingdom. Archibald MacLeish was right. The only thing about a man that is a man is his mind. Everything else you'll find in a pig or a horse. And the thing that really causes us to be what we are these factors. We leave everyone then on the tune of perception. It's how are you looking at these tools? Now, you've got a choice. You can listen to this and say, wow, that's interesting information. Now, let's get on with something else. Or you can say, no, wait a minute. I'm going to do what they suggested about memory. I'm going to get the memory book, and I'm going to study. I'm going to start listening to this over and over again. Repetition is the first law of learning, as we have all been taught. The more that we listen to this, the more you play this, the better off you'll be. And you should share it with your friends. So, Mary, I've really enjoyed working with you on this. This has been a real pleasure just sitting here and recording this with you. It's been a wonderful experience. I can't help but think this is going to help millions of people all over the world. It's a rich experience for us, and it's a nice thing to know that this will keep going and going and going even if we don't. I think that's what you want to do, and that's what I want to do.
We created this program with you in mind. We imaginally brought you into the room to sit down with us. We brought you to the kitchen table, and we said, let's sit down and have a conversation with a person who is interested and is seeking to have a greater life. There is that in you that is seeking for a greater life. It is life itself. We live in a spiral universe. Your very DNA is a spiral. There's an ever upward pull of greater becoming everywhere present in the entire universe. The universe is seeking greater, freer, fuller, expanded expression by means of itself everywhere. That means by means of you, a greater life is seeking to express itself. You call that your dreams. You call that your ideas of possibility. The Talmud says every blade of grass has an angel that leans over it, whispering, grow, grow, grow. Well, that blade of grass will press through cement seeking the light. And there is that in you that is seeking the greater, freer, fuller expression. Those ideas that come to you are precious. As unique as your thumbprint is the unique you seeking expression for you to give your gifts into the world. And without you, we are not complete. So pay attention to the longings in your heart, to the dreams in your mind, and then practice knowing, as you study these principles, there is not one thing that is beyond your capacity. It might have been beyond your understanding prior to this study, but there is not one thing you could imagine that is beyond your capacity to create, because you create with the mind that creates universes. Thoreau said this, "The universe is wider than our views of it. Direct your eye right inward, and you'll find 1,000 regions in your mind yet undiscovered. Travel them and be an expert in home cosmography." Well, that home inside you takes you to the infinite. There is nothing you can't create. Thank you, Bob Proctor, and thank you.
The gift of perception is what allows you to be the architect of your future rather than a victim of circumstances. You have the choice to perceive every situation, no matter how dire it may seem, in a positive and empowering light. In this last session, Bob and Mary have offered ideas for effectively exercising that choice and some incredible stories of the amazing things happen once you do. As you've no doubt realized by now, the gifts revealed to you in this program are not distinct entities. They're all interconnected, each one impacting and impacted by the others. All six of these gifts have always been in you and with you. The difference is you now have the knowledge and understanding to consciously use them in consistently positive and effective ways. You now realize how much positive creative power you really have over your own outcomes. The next part, using that power to change your life, is up to you. We hope you've enjoyed being a part of this conversation between Bob Proctor and Mary Morrissey, two remarkable individuals who share one extraordinary mission: to empower you to create the abundant, prosperous, joyous life you were designed and born to live. Bob Proctor and Mary Morrissey stand as living testimonies to the power of ongoing, lifelong learning. If you've enjoyed and benefited from what you've heard in this program, don't let the journey end here. Visit bobproctor.com and marymorrissey.com, where you'll discover more ways to expand your consciousness, increase your personal power, and live the life you want to be living. For Bob Proctor and Mary Morrissey, I'm Sandy Gallagher. Thank you.